inflation in supply chains.
Blog Talk Radio.
In a conference call with analysts, Solomon said he expects more volatility and uncertainty as central banks tighten financial conditions to fight inflation. The House Judiciary Committee is set to take up legislation this week that would ban assault rifles. Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez says all folks have to do is watch the video of the Uvalde school shooting to see how much damage they do.
All of the door material, shards, sheetrock just blasting over the heads of the officers as they run away.
The full security cam video showing the massacre at the Texas Elementary School is now out in public. Officers can be seen running from the carnage caused by the gunman who murdered 19 students and two teachers. The assault weapons ban has more than 200 Democratic co-sponsors. No Republicans have signed on. Senator Ted Cruz believes same-sex marriage should be left up to the states, just like what he says the Supreme Court recently did with abortion.
So look, Obergefell, like Roe versus Wade, ignored two centuries of our nation's history. Marriage was always an issue that was left to the states.
In a video posted to his YouTube page, the Texas Republican says the ruling that legalized gay marriage should be reconsidered. This is far from the first time that Cruz has waded into the debate. He was vocal about his opposition during a 2016 presidential run. The sentencing phase of the convicted Parkland, Florida school shooter is underway. Nearly 2,000 witnesses could be called to the stand in the coming months, but lead prosecutor Michael Satz began setting the stage during opening statements.
I'm going to speak to you about the unspeakable, about this defendant's goal-directed, planned, systematic murder.
The defense will try to convince jurors Cruz should face life in prison instead of the death penalty. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Doug.
Chances are you're jamming in your car right now. And since Liberty Mutual customizes car insurance, so you only pay for what you need, Limu and I are going to show you some safe car dance moves. Hit it. Everybody, check your blind spots real quick. Now hands on the wheel. Put them 10 in 2 and move your head like a bird do. Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather. Outlook for Monday, well, we'll see some morning drizzle, but don't worry, it'll burn off by this afternoon to mostly sunny skies. High temperatures around 74, 75 degrees. Tonight, clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 56. For Tuesday, Wednesday, and for Thursday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures on the rise, upper 70s to low 80s in selected areas with partly cloudy skies and some clear breaks through the evening. Low temperatures in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. That's who I am. I'm Dr. Pat. I get to hang out with you every day, Monday through Friday, pretty much. And then, of course, there's a lot of other people that come on, our hosts and co-hosts from the Transformation Network and Transformation Talk Radio. And I get to hang out with our most amazing producers. Today, we've got Micah at the helm at Transformation Talk Radio and Benny. Benny is my kick. He's been with me for AM/FM, like in this time spot for 20 years coming up on. And here we are today because this is a powerful show. Benny, Micah, how are you both doing?
I'm doing good, Pat. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I was just talking with Vicki. Okay. Vicki Dobbs is my very special guest. Her book is Get Off the Shelf, Choose You First. Now, we're going to go through this book, but it's a personal story. It's a personal story that every one of us has. But it's also about, metaphorically, how women enter into our busy worlds, how we feel we are alone a lot of the time, but is that true? What happens when we carve out time? I just went through, I'm going through this myself this week, and I shared a little bit with Vicki. But I'm going to start out of the gate with a couple things. I am a closeted field and tracker, Benny. Now, let me just put this in perspective for everybody. And then Vicki's going to give you a statistic that's going to blow your mind about herself. But I really am. You know, ever since I could remember, I just love the idea of running. Now, I will tell you, I am not built to run. I was never built to run. And great shortstop playing softball, but they knew that I would have to hit the ball really, really far to get to first base. But that doesn't mean I don't love it. And I am thrilled about this year's World Track and Field Championships right down the road from us, Oregon. And I love this. And I love that we are breaking records. I love that we're having things that happen in the women's events, in the men's events. I'm also a little bit confused and not knowing how to process some of the missteps. But that's what Vicki's going to talk about today. Because what do we talk? Get off the shelf. Choose you first. You have a right to be happy. So what are the missteps? Well, a couple missteps we've already talked about. Sheree Richardson, of course, although one of the fastest runners on the planet, was eliminated from Olympic trials because marijuana tests or something like that. So couldn't get back on track. So it's not even competing here. But then Eagles' Damon Allen disqualified. What? The fastest 110 hurdles person on the planet jumped the gun by 0.1. Now, I will tell you, this was a sign of what was going to come because when the women were racing, they had two athletes disqualified. Two of them. I think one of them was the United States. But why am I so fixated on this? What is this about this? Because this is just one other way that we as human beings excel. You know, this is how we show up in life. This is how we get off the shelf. You know, this is how when we think about our lives and we think about what we can't do or don't know how to do or don't think we can do, and then you show up, and you show up big. What happens? Now, I want to just put a caveat on this, and then we're going to go to my guest, because my guest has got this down. So when I'm talking about Vicki, I'm talking about the founder of Wisdom Evolution, right? And she is out there, cheerleader, pom-poms and everything for the You First Revolution. Yes, why? OMG. I'll tell you why. Because I went through this myself over the weekend. I am like everybody else. Remember, I created Crust Busting Benny, right? So you know, and I'll tell you now, it is very difficult for me to take time for myself. But when I sit down and I read this book and I get off the shelf. I get to choose me first. I have a right to be happy. When I start to read what Vicki is bringing out here, I'm saying it is more than an invitation. Today, get ready. Get ready to get off the shelf. I don't care if you got to get a crowbar. Benny, we need the jackhammer. I don't care if you got to get a jackhammer to get the crust off you to get off the shelf. Because if you don't do it, you have one life to live. And you will be looking back like Devon. And you will be thinking, what was I thinking? Vicki, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pat. I am so excited to be here with you live. It's, dream come true.
Man, I'll tell you, we need this message. Look, many of us understand that this is a challenge for us to begin with in life. We get it. I know it. I know myself. And yet at the same time, we don't want to look back and have regrets, or we don't want to be sitting at a place where we are just completely burnt out, fried, like fried from the inside out because we have not done this. But I want to ask you, nobody writes something like this. You don't create a movement like this unless you have some personal experience with this. I want to know, okay, what challenges, obstacles did you, Vicki Dobbs, have to overcome for you to get off the shelf and be here today?
First, I had to give myself permission. And as a young girl growing up in the 50s and 60s, we weren't given permission to be first in our lives. We were told, wait your turn. Let the other one go first. They're more important. It was stand back and be graciously next. And sometimes that didn't feel real good. But you aren't told it's okay to value you above everything else. You're given this box to put yourself in that says, when it's your turn, when it's time. And I'm here to tell you, you have to give you permission to be first in your life. Nobody else is going to give it to you.
You know, I mean, I know that we're talking about this, at least from our perspective as women, because I can't reflect on what men go through. I can only reflect on, as a woman, what I go through and the women I work with and the people I work with, what it's like for them. And, you know, part of this discovery and part of what you talk about is you talk about having the curiosity, the courage, and the strength to look deep within, right? I think you open your book with something like that, into the folds of your own heart and soul. See, and I love that you opened it up with that, because when you open a book like that, and thank you, Lynn Andrews, right? When you open your book like that, and you hear the sound of the drums calling, we step out. What gets in our way? What gets in our way to the future? Like what you talk about when you say the future stands open-armed in invitation. Each step, a lifetime's journey, in, out, into myself. That's how this book starts. Boy, what a journey it is. What gets in our way from your perspective?
Everybody else's voice. Because again, we are given teachers, we are told to seek teachers, and we give the wise people in our lives permission to have a greater voice than our own. And what I want people to know is that now is the time for us to look inside as much as we look and search outside for the answers, because we, each one of us, hold the answers, but we aren't given the tools to move inside and listen to our own divine inspiration, the voice of God that lives within each and every one of us.
You know, this is really a giant message for us all. I find myself today coming off a Sunday that I shared with you, because I was reading, I always get prepared for the shows, yeah? And I found myself making a decision Sunday morning. And the decision was, there are several things that are milestones for this network, the network we're building on technology. What needs to be in place? What needs to be in place for people? And it was, do I sit here Sunday and do this and really get us set up for a September event, or do I go cut my grass? Now, tempting. Cutting the grass was very tempting. But that wouldn't have got me off the shelf I needed to get off. It would have got me off a different shelf, but not the one that enabled me to sit for almost 10 hours yesterday, with kind of the field and track in the background, I must say, and get some very significant things done. But I'll tell you, I did think, cut the grass, repot the pots, fix the sprinkler. What do you think I read in your book that had me make that choice?
Calendar your priorities. Put you first.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, many people are coming off of what they have 3 years where they have had to look at themselves and look close inside. And this has not been a 3 years where a lot of folks have been able to put themselves first.
Right.
So I want to ask you this question. It's not as obvious to me as it was yesterday as I was going through and reading what you were saying. And understanding exactly where I was. We don't know we're on the shelf. We don't know it. How can we get the clues to tell us, hello, I'm sitting on the shelf?
Listen to your body. When you are uncomfortable, when you are at dis-ease, when you find no peace in your life, when you feel that constant churning, something's missing, something isn't right, but you can't identify it because you don't take the time to sit in silence and be with yourself, because you've put everybody and everything else in your life ahead of you. Eventually, you're going to get sick. You're going to have time to spend with yourself, laying in bed, recuperating.
You know, as I think about this, I have a mentor that used to say something to me, and I want you to respond to it, because it's in the book here. It's in here somewhere. Maybe like the stone people, but let me just get to it. I had a mentor, Sidonia Cahill. She was one of the first women ever in the United States to create sacred circles, healing circles. Very, very little people know about her, but, you know, she wrote a fantastic book way back. And then she, for almost 30 years, would take people out into the high desert for vision questing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what she did. I happen to be fortunate enough to be part of that, only because my boss was a real snake and he wanted me to go and steal all her ideas. That's how I ended up. But, oh, my God, the universe, God doesn't work like that. God knew I needed to go there. But the thing that is so important for me to think about and ask you about is this idea of why we think self-care is selfish.
Because
that's a big one, right?
We've been taught it. We've been programmed to believe that we are not supposed to think of ourselves first. We have husbands and children and partners and jobs and bosses and ministers and responsibilities and volunteer work and you name it. We are busy people. And none of that busy includes taking care of ourselves, because we've been programmed to do everything else first. When there's time, when I can, as soon as I finish this, I'll do it next. And next never comes because something else gets in the way and says, I'm more important. So you have to give yourself permission to put you first. You have to put you at the top of your priority list. And I'm here to tell you, putting you first is not selfish. It is self-sustaining. It is survival. It's the way you grow to be 100 years old and still sit on the sidelines and cheer for your favorite team instead of laying in a bed withering because you never gave yourself time to be healthy inside and out.
I'm there now. And so it's not a mistake that I get your book and I'm reading it. Now, I have to tell you, I have to read books several times. I have pretty much, I would say I'm at about 95% reading every book that has ever come across my desk for 20 years, only because I grew up learning different and I couldn't read and write. So I'm reading your story and I'm reading a little bit about what you say. And what your journey, a little bit about what your journey was like. And when you ask the question, had I lost sight of my dream? And then the answer is, what dream? And then you go on to talk about this, and you say this, because I want to ask you about this. We have got to find a way to help people, to help women resurrect their dreams. You go on to say, the human spirit inside each of us has enormous capacity to survive every unexpected twist and turn life has to offer. I know that's true. I know that's true of me. My mom's suicide, being homeless, being arrested for something I didn't do, and then telling the truth to a judge who just looked at me and said, you're either the dumbest person I've ever met or that is the truth. How important, and what have you learned from getting off the shelf and our ability to be adaptogens. Is that like a noun? I don't know what that is, but adaptable.
I think that each and every one of us has to hit bottom. The way that our society gives us a reason to change is to take what's important away, whether that's a job or a home or a partner or a pet. The way that we end up on the shelf is because something has gotten in the way of us. And sometimes that's just the real busy of life. And months and years can go by and you realize, I didn't take that picture. I didn't hold that child. I didn't kiss him goodnight. And then the heaviness of what could have been begins to weigh you down and ruin what will be. So when you get to that place of, I just can't do this anymore, and you sink to the floor, pick up a piece of paper and write, I choose me on it, and stick it on the refrigerator, stick it on the bathroom mirror, and begin to believe that you matter. You have a right to be happy. Put you first.
I want to talk to you a minute about the beginnings of this. I started out before we came on. Benny and Micah, they were getting our audio and the thing done. And I was telling you that I was watching these championship trials. And you shared something with me that you're a record holder. So we had a few back and forths about this because we don't really talk about our accomplishment. How often have you been out at some kind of event? And especially with women, mostly women, right? And it's very rare, unless you ask somebody, that they talk about their accomplishment. Now, I talk about my table tennis because I love the sport, but rarely does anybody know how many medals. And it was interesting. I'd like you to address this. It was interesting, Vicki. It was really interesting last weekend. Somebody found me in some historic record from 73 or 4, like a picture of me and my coach. And the guy walks up to me and says, just how many medals and trophies have you won? And I said, what are you talking? I said, what do you mean? I mean, I'm over here playing this sport because I love it. I'm playing like, he says, yeah, I found something on you. I'm like, oh, this is stalker material, right? This is like getting creepy. I said, well, what did you find? And he said, I just want to know, how many did you win? I said, well, by the time I was 24, if you're talking about this sport and championship, I had pretty much tallied up close to 225
amazing
results. He said, that's impossible. Okay, here we go. So in my brain, I'm like, oh, I'm a fraud. Let's get down to this, because your personal story and how you got here and you wrote this and why you wrote this book is not because you had nothing better to do, Vicki. What are the underpinnings of why you wrote this book and the message for our time for women today?
Well, I was given a very visceral vision, and it feels so real, but I can't find the place it happened. So it had to be a dreamtime message that was so physically real, it's like I could touch it. I was walking down a hallway lined with bookshelves, and something caught my attention. I looked up and to the left, and there I sat, cross-armed, cross-legged, knee bouncing up and down, looking down at myself, going, what the hell am I doing on the shelf again? And it didn't have a context for me then, but it kept coming back into my thoughts. And I realized that get off the shelf was a metaphor for me in how I set myself aside in service to everything and everybody else in my life except me. And it wasn't until I was in my 50s and I found Lynn Andrews' books and attended one of her events and started her school, where suddenly somebody gave me permission to have boundaries. And it's like, wait a minute, I can say no. That's a new one. And I swear, when my son was born, my doctor said that I was emblazoned with a tattoo across my forehead that said, I'm easy, just ask. And no was a speech impediment I had developed after childbirth. I forgot how to say no. And I'm not saying it was to my kids. It was to everybody. And maybe that's just the way I grew up.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I can have boundaries. I can say no. And the first time I said to somebody, you no longer have my permission to treat me like that, not only did I shock myself that it came out of my mouth, but the person I was talking to was so wide-eyed. What do you mean? I always have. I can't now. What's changed? Well, I learned something about myself, that I had worth, I had value beyond the trophies, beyond the top production, beyond the top producers, beyond all the things that I accomplished. I had worth underneath that that had nothing to do with what I did in the world or provided to the world.
And, you know, this is really, when we come back from break, we're going to really dig deeper into this. I want everybody to know, first of all, this is a show for you all out there. If you are listening to this show, this is where you get to call in and ask the most incredible Vicki Dobbs, this question. Ask her a question about some way in your life you're not getting off the shelf and you want to get off the shelf today. Because I'm telling you, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be Devon. I do not want to be that gentleman that jumped point one of whatever that was a second and look back at his life knowing even if he got out of the gate 2 seconds slower than everybody else, he could win that race. I don't want to be that. But I will acknowledge him for one thing. He got off the show. He was out there. He has practiced. He has worked hard. He has put himself forward. But now, this is about us. We're going to take a short break. I want you to go ahead and take a look. Vicki Dobbs, and it's VickiDobbs.com. Go right over there. You're going to see the book right there. And once you see the book right there, you're going to be able to get yourself a copy of the book. You're going to be able to sign up for a newsletter. You're going to be able to read about Vicki. There's a lot. You're going to be able to, one of my favorite things to do, because I'm planning my spiritual, let's just call it practicums. You're going to be able to take a look at Sacred Wisdom Workshops. There's a bunch of free stuff. There's just so much going on here. Take a look at this. And then don't forget. This is the most, I love this. Go read the blog. Go read the blog. Forgiveness, love letters and legacies. Please, this is your time. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, oh, Benny, you got that crust-busting effect ready to go. What is the Achilles heel that somebody like me has struggled with most of my life, but I think Vicki, too, I think we have this in common, although I did not break my high school record at, what was it, the long jump?
Junior high school. They called it the standing broad jump back then. Oh, you stood and jumped. You didn't run and jump.
Oh, and you broke that record, right?
Well, I set the record. I don't know that there was one before that. But, yeah, last time I was at my junior high school, it was still there on the board.
I don't even know how you did that. There's a reason they don't want me to play basketball. Jumping is not my thing. When we come back, what is this one thing? What is this one thing that will shut the lights down in a hot second before you even know where the switch is? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Benny, let's take a short break. Micah, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Innate brilliance already lives inside of you. Come discover it so you can shine brightly in this world. Join me, your host, Adrienne Cobb, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, during Wild Magic on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get answers to who you are and where you belong. To learn more about me and the show, visit MyWildMagic.com. Again, that's MyWildMagic.com.
It's time to tap into your divine self through angelic guidance. Join your host, Cindy Smith, and co-host in the Angel Empowerment Show from I Can't to I Can, airing every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn from four of the best angel empowerment practitioners in the field. Together, they will share experiential teachings and offer live, on-air professional angel card readings and much more. For more information, visit CindySmithAEP.com.
Do you get stuck in that someday attitude, living the same day over and over again with no action? The Becoming You Show, big ideas that inspire, impact, and influence your life with Leah Rowling is for you. Tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Central on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will have you feeling inspired to take action with purpose and intention. For more information and to get in touch with me, visit www.leahrowling.com.
Everyone, I'm Dr. Pat. I'm the host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I am the creator of the Transformation Network, doing what we do in the world of positive radio, informed, educated, positive media. Independent radio hosts and independent networks have been the face of positive messaging over the past decade. So all of us here have decided we're going to put together an independent network that is going to enable people to bring their positive message of hope, inspiration, and conscious action to the forefront. Help us create a future of amazing, uplifting stories that can be told so we can tell our children and they can tell their children of what hope and conscious action is all about. I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You are made for more. I'm Coach Lisa, and I'm here to help you achieve ultimate life satisfaction. Your life matters to the world. Reimagine your future with an individualized life by design approach with my free ebook, The 5 C's of Coaching: Commitment, Clarity, Coachable, Creative, and Change. Find the transformation you're looking for. Go to lisabelz.com. That's LYSABELTZ.com.
Everybody, welcome back. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Vicki Dobbs joining me here today. I want you all to know this is a book, Get Off the Shelf, Choose You First. You have the right to be happy. But let me just mention this. She's got another book that is equally interesting, and it's called You First. And what we're about to talk about right now is going to tap into both of those books and the message in each of them to bring you to where you may be today. But before we do, I want to make sure you know how to get a hold of Vicki. Just go ahead and go to her website. It's Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, Dobbs, D-O-B as in boy, B-S. When you get there, you're going to see a whole lot of things. Wisdom Evolution, she's an award-winning author, spiritual entrepreneur, teacher, coach, storyteller, and so much more. Vicki, thank you. I can't thank you enough for joining me here today, and thank you for writing this book for me. Actually, it is true. Writing this book for me in a time that I needed to read it to be reminded of it. You know, I was sharing that story with you, and we're going to talk about this thing that before the break that hit me. I was sharing this story with you of my Sunday. And I'm sure people are listening and they're saying, well, wait a minute. That is not what you're talking about with the book. That's not putting you first. You worked all day. This is important to me, to launch this network and our new technology, to launch our crowdfunding. I set a $2.3 million crowdfunding goal over the weekend. And when people hear that I worked, they're like, you are not doing what Vicki told you to do. But yet, at the end of my day, I was doing it for me. I want you to really talk about a couple things. One, how other people's opinions of us, and I'm just saying could be from childhood, I don't care where it comes from, how it instills in us a version of doubt with a capital D, and how insidious is that to whether or not we get off the shelf or we stay on the shelf.
Absolutely. Doubt is one of the biggest catapults to the shelf. And I think that the old Cherokee story about the two wolves that sit on our, you know, shoulders getting a fight, one's dark, one's light, which one are you going to feed? And I have two little voices. In my right ear, I always hear the voice that says, no, you shouldn't. You got, there's other, what about? There's just, and the one over here that says, really? I mean, go for it. Doors open, walk through. Take a chance. You know, outside your comfort zone. You need to do what's important to you. For you, getting all of the technology in place not only was what you wanted to do, but it fed your joy. It's a dream you're pushing yourself towards. Mowing the yard is something you got to do every week, but, you know, I'm here to tell you there's people you can get to mow the yard if you don't get around to it. Nobody but you can create the genius behind what you do. So it's not just about taking a bath and reading a book. It's not just about going for a walk at sunset or at sunrise. It's about feeding the fire that's deep inside of you, fueling the joy that drives the passion that gives you purpose in your life when you choose you first. Whatever choice you make, as long as it's your choice and not someone else's. And learn to hear from both ears so you can discern which one you want to feed, which voice you want to listen to. And I get sidelined with doubt constantly. I mean, I changed clothes 3 times between 8 and 9 this morning getting ready for your show. We all have doubt. It's just a part of, I don't hesitate to say our genetics, but I don't know a single person who doesn't doubt. It's what you do with that doubt. When you can take a hold of it and drive yourself towards your passion and take doubt along with you, let it be the thing that says, do I want to do this or this? Doubt gives you choice, and that's where free will comes in.
You know, and part of this, too, is there is that level of doubt that will make us more aware, so to speak. At least this is my experience of it. You know, there's a level of doubt that has shown up in my life time and time again. It has shown up as let me just put it in my terms, as a gentle messenger. And if I see it at that and not let it build up momentum, not let it take up on energy, because once it gets past a certain point, it can become crippling. And it's different than fear, I think. So let's talk about this for a minute. It's different than fear, right? And let's talk about a couple of examples of this. And the reason I say it's different than fear, although fear may be underneath it, right? It's a little different. And it shows up in strange ways. I'm telling you, I'm getting ready for a tournament, and I was playing on Saturday, and I realized there were about a small percentage of my shots where I'm playing with my partner. We're getting ready to defend our gold medal here, and I'm playing with her, and I stop mid-stroke, and I nailed it. It was indecision. It was not just indecision. It was doubt that I would actually be able to make that kind. Now, look, I play a sport that the ball comes at you 80 miles an hour, and so what I'm describing to you happens in a nanosecond, but boy, I could see it, and everybody saw it. Everybody saw me stop and not finish the stroke. And then it happened again and again and again, and I didn't really reread your book till Sunday, so this didn't help me for Saturday, but when I read it, I realized I don't want to drown in doubt. I don't want to. And isn't part of what you're doing helping us understand that we don't have to drown in doubt?
Yes, you have to face doubt. When we feel ourselves reaching for that last gulp of air because we're drowning in doubt, we either go down with it or we swim to the surface, take a bigger gulp of air, and turn around and look doubt square in the eyes and say, I see you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big key. You have to recognize that doubt is driving your decisions. You aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And if we make all of our decisions based on what if, we will always question every decision we make, and it will keep us halfway there. You won't ever quite cross the finish line. You won't finish that stroke because what if?
Yeah. You know, I was reading, you know, there's a part of your book that I was reading, and thank you. So let me just thank you for this. Thank you for writing a book where you're sharing your own journey. Thank you for doing that. Because I think that's what we need now. You know, the publishers are saying, when are you going to write your book? And I've never felt comfortable writing it because there's so much of our personal journey that we somehow have to weave to let folks know they can do it too. Everything in the book that you wrote, from falling apart, and thank you for being so blunt about that, from identifying your own first time, like, this is the first time, like, here I am on the show. What was that like? What was your first time like, Vicki?
Well, I think probably, and I write about this in the book, a dear friend who came to me in my real estate business as a client, and we had a 20-year friendship, I put her on a pedestal. She didn't ask to be there, but I saw this woman as extremely well-educated, two PhDs, very prominent in her own life. She was grounded, and she brought the metaphysical world to me by gifting me Lynn Andrews' book in this brown, faded pages falling out. And it's like, you got to give back exactly how you got it. So read this and keep all the pages where they belong. And then I went and found the rest of her books. And once I began to read more than just the great stories that they were, when I began to realize that there was a message in every one of those books that was much deeper than the story, I was reading Windhorse Woman riding a train home from Colorado, and I had this huge aha moment that said, oh my God, I have given my power away. Now, we all do it consciously and unconsciously. We take power consciously and unconsciously. But I had given this woman the power to tell me how long my hair should be. I should wear black instead of brown, that blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't, she wasn't doing it because that's who she was. I had literally given her permission without asking to be on this pedestal. And I went to her the day I was going to my graduation from Lynn's school. And I said, I want to thank you. Because of you, this is where I am. But I gave you this kind of power over my life, and with a big hug, I'm taking it back. And never again will you have that kind of power over my life. And that was my big aha, that I was leaking power, giving everybody else permission in my life to tell me who to be, how to be, what to be, when to be, where to be, and setting myself in the background, on the shelf.
Yeah. You know, and you really, you're right. You call this right out in the book. You really are very clear about it, but the way you tell the story is just so beautiful in that I feel like you're right there. I think there was one line in there, you know, I can't remember exactly, but it was stop. And you said, you're screaming, stop. And then you're here, you're leaking energy, right? Giving your power away, right? And I can't remember exactly who you were talking with, but boy, the idea of giving a power away, I want to spend a moment to talk about that with you, because it is an essential part, I think, of if we don't understand what this looks like, if we don't understand what giving away our power looks like, then we don't even know we're doing it, which means we don't even know that that's something we have to be aware of, which means we don't even know that there's something that we have to do differently.
Right.
And I think you really address this well, both in this book and your first book, because I think as women, and I'm going to generalize, which I don't like to do, a lot of us have been groomed to put other people first.
Absolutely.
Right. And so talk about this idea of not giving away our power. Now, I am one of these people. I never hesitate to use the word power. As a matter of fact, I have another show that I call Power Up with Dr. Pat. And I'm going to tell you, when I launched that show, I got so much feedback about using the word power. I don't understand what we're afraid of with that word.
Well, I think the world has taught us that power means control. Power is something that overlays everything else. It is the driving force that controls decisions, lives, worlds, wars. And that's not the kind of power that I'm talking about. I'm talking about a power that comes from within, that's driven by your self-worth, that's driven by your own opinion of yourself, as opposed to taking the power of somebody else as yours. So a real easy way to do is codependency. Okay, I'm going to give you everything you need to make your life happy, even if it's at the expense of mine. Don't worry about me. I'm going to fix you. I have just, in my rational mind, made somebody else's life better. Pat me on the back. What I have done existentially is robbed them of their experience and their ability to do for themselves. So to simplify it, stop giving the world fish and start teaching the world to fish again.
Yeah.
And that's how you give people their power back, by empowering them to do for themselves and letting them know they're capable, they're worthy, they're strong enough, and they can.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, too, I wanted to have you speak to is this idea that we have that creating change like this within ourselves has to take decades. Wait, remember you read that somewhere? I think that was like maybe in the fifth discipline book that came out, like when I was in HR. Like, and we all got that big fat book, right, that none of us can implement. It's almost as bad as trying to implement my friend Don Miguel's book, The Four Agreements.
Yeah.
I've said this to him before. I said, when I get to do all four, I'll call you. I haven't called him yet.
Right.
But you understand what I'm asking you, right?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to take decades. You can flip your power switch like that by simply taking a breath before you give, taking a breath before you do, and allow yourself to be in that moment making your own decision, not driven by the voice telling you what you're supposed to be doing that's based on somebody else's opinion of you or the world, but listening to the voice that's telling you what you can do, what you need to do for you, and how you can best serve the world as the best you. Because one of the things that I learned, and in writing this book, felt, because it isn't a process that happens in 60 days. Get off the shelf took 5 years to get here because doubt creeped into the way. I didn't want to go through that story again. I'm not talking about, I don't want to face it. I'm done through it, over it, not going back there again. Wrong. Every time you come to a decision in your life that says, been there, done that, don't want to do it again, you need to look at it again. Because that spirit telling you, you ain't done yet. You got some more cooking to do. So take a breath. That's my biggest. Before you jump into something that you have butterflies about, take a breath.
Look, one of the things that I love is how the universe, God, works, at least in my life, where something will show up at the exact time that we need to hear. See, it's no mistake you're on the show today, that Linda scheduled this, that we're talking about this, that I had the weekend I had. There's no mistake. There's no mistake that I talked to multiple women over the weekend. I work with women in addiction and recovery. I've been doing that for 32 years this year. And it's no mistake that I got your book here and I'm listening to this here. And, you know, I just want to say, read this book, please. Read this book, please. Read this book, please. Because when you work with people that are in recovery, they have to put themselves first.
Yes.
Or they're not going to get past very much. But there's one thing, too. So many things that I want to talk to you about in your book. So and I know this time is like coming to the end of it. But the one thing I do want to ask you in the minutes we have left, if there are three messages, tips, three things that you could talk to our audience and say, please do these three things today, what would they be, Vicki?
Boy, number one, take a breath. Number two, calendar you first. That means put the F words in your life on your calendar and hold yourself accountable for showing up for yourself. That's faith, family, fun, fitness, finances, friends. Put the F words on your calendar. Some may be negotiable, like if you got to take your kid to the doctor, you might cancel lunch with your girlfriend. But others are non-negotiable. Taking a weekend in Sedona to hike by yourself and recharge your battery may be a non-negotiable event when the family wants you to cook dinner for a picnic in the backyard. Hey, you know what? Somebody else can cook. I need me time. Calendar the F words in your life. And the third is that priority list. It kind of goes right along with the calendar. But if you don't put you at the top of your priority list and do what you need to do for you first, then when you get to the bottom of your list and everything's all done, all you've managed to do is gift the world with what's left of you because they didn't get the best of you when you don't put you first.
Hmm. The things that you mentioned and the importance of them, I think are right out of the gate. Number one for me is for people to understand how we limit ourselves, right? You know, I think there's a part in the book where you talk about I can do it all, or, you know, you're talking about the self-imposed limitations we have. But then you take us on a journey, right? And the journey is about navigating. And I think this to me was so important. And also, by the way, I'm going to take you up on your advice to get away to save my sanity. So I'm just going to just tell you right there, if people want to ask me about that, they can call you. but one of the things, too, that is so important is we do have to navigate. We have to become great navigators.
Yes.
Don't we?
Yes.
Right? Because we're not just changing a moment, although we are also looking at years, you know, of things that are going around up here. Like you, it is no mistake that even before I could even read a paragraph that didn't take me a half hour to read, somebody gave me Viktor Frankl's book. Then they gave me Power versus Force. Then I got the message, I see what you're trying to do. You want me to read these. But this idea of navigating reality, that has to come from body, mind, spirit, soul, right?
And I add in their heart.
Oh, heart, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because you need to learn how to listen from the ears of your heart, not just the ears of your head. And you need to listen and make decisions from your body's mind, not your ego's mind. And if you can learn to discern the difference between those two things, life becomes magical.
Mm-hmm. Mm. When you think about where we are today in the world, and I really would love to get your perspective on this. When you think about where we are in the world and what we've gone through in these past 3 years, what do you think is being activated in us to inspire us to change?
Oh, life and death choices.
Yeah.
It's real simple. You have to choose when you are cut off from everything and everybody that you know and love. You choose to live or die. And so we've seen a lot of people leave. And those that are staying have to make a conscious decision every day to breathe. And I want to say that as much as you are needed in the world around you, if you don't take care of you first, you won't survive the world coming at you. So every morning, be grateful that you woke up in your sand, as my friend says, fork it side down, and move out into the world as the very best you choose to be, because you're a reflection of what's going on in the world. And when you are being your best self, you reflect that goodness to the people that you meet. And it's a ripple effect. Be the first stone that dropped in the water smiles. Your smile will be contagious, and the next one will smile at the next one. And if I know 10, each one of those know 10, and suddenly there's hundreds of smiles in the world. Because you care, someone else will care.
Mm. Well, I can't thank you enough for today. I want to just ask you again, let people know how to get a copy of the book, how to find out more about you, how to join you on Sacred Journeys, all of the above. And then for many people, you know, this is a message for a time. So tell us the best way to really connect with you.
VickiDobbs.com, everything's there. Of course, the books are available on Amazon or anywhere good books are sold. The voice of me being a revolutionary in a very soft and quiet, subtle way. Join the You First Revolution on Facebook. And let's make a change. Let's put you first and make that the power that drives the world. Not being selfish, being self-caring.
Yeah.
VickiDobbs.com.
I love it. Vicki, thank you so much for everything. And also, I highly recommend people read your first book, too.
You First.
You First.
Practical Wisdom for Nurturing Body, Mind, Heart, and Soul.
Yeah. It's even hard, right? You know this. You work with women. I work with women. When you give the assignment, I want you to say 100 times, I put me first. Really, that is the starting place.
And you have to say it out loud.
You've got to say it out loud. Yeah. None of this writing down on the paper stuff.
It's fine to have it posted on your mirror. It's fine to write it in your journal. But unless you hear it, say it, see it, and embody it, it won't become real.
I love it.
Believe it.
I'm telling you, it has really caused me to take an extra day off and go down to the tournament early.
Yay.
Thank you for that, Vicki. Hey, we're going to take a short break. Vicki Dobbs, everybody, we're going to take a short break. We're not done yet. We've got another show coming up. Benny, Micah, Vicki, so much love to you.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday morning to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update. For around the town, we have a collision on I-5 southbound at milepost 4.5 around 78th Street. The left and center lanes are blocked. Use caution around that area. That's on I-5 southbound near milepost 4.5 around 78th Street.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Inflation is deeply entrenched in the global economy. That's according to Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon. He also expects more volatility and uncertainty as central banks tighten financial conditions to fight inflation. Vice President Harris is going after Republicans over guns.
Scenes of ordinary life have been turned into war zones.
Speaking at the NAACP convention in New Jersey, Harris said Americans have a right to be free from rampant gun violence. She argued Republicans should agree to reasonable gun safety measures. Harris said there's no reason for weapons of war on the streets of America. That was a reference to military-style assault weapons.
The official report on the Uvalde, Texas school shooting spreads around blame, but it doesn't mention the laws in Texas that allow an 18-year-old to legally buy an assault weapon. Clay Robison with the Texas State Teachers Association said that needs to be talked about more.
This was an 18-year-old sociopath who legally purchased not one, but two assault-type rifles.
The state's largest teachers union wants the age limit to buy an assault rifle raised to 21. Europe's heat wave is shattering records. That's the case in Wales as it set a new record by reaching 95.5 degrees. The previous record came back in 1990. The new record comes as the continent is dealing with raging heat and wildfires. The heat has led Spain's prime minister to say climate change kills. Officials in Akron, Ohio say they'll start a citizens review board following the death of a young black man. City Council President Margot Somerville said it will look at complaints against Akron Police Department officers. The citizens review board is being created after last month's police shooting death of Jalen Walker. Nobody had all the matching numbers in Friday night's drawing of the Mega Millions jackpot, so it now rolls up to one of the highest jackpots in history. Tomorrow's Mega Millions drawing will be worth at least $530 million, or, if you like the sound of it better, over $500 million, with a cash option of $304.7 million. It's currently the eighth largest jackpot on record. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather. Outlook for Monday, well, we'll see some morning drizzle, but don't worry, it'll burn off by this afternoon to mostly sunny skies. High temperatures around 74, 75 degrees. Tonight, clear skies, low temperatures back down to about 56. For Tuesday, Wednesday, and for Thursday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures on the rise, upper 70s to low 80s in selected areas. With partly cloudy skies and some clear breaks through the evening, low temperatures in the upper 50s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring. And coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome. For those of you that have been with us for the last hour, we're just back. We're just back here. We're just back doing another show because why? I love to do it. I love being a student, and I love that we get to connect with all of you. As I've said a million times, you're the best audience on the planet. And, you know, we collect information from you. We find out what it is that you want. We don't do it like Google, but we ask you. And we ask you about what are the shows you want to hear more of? What are the things that are on your mind? You know, how do we have a conversation about spirituality? In your the way that you phrase it, spirituality, that digs deep from history, right? But also gets us to the unmet needs of where we are today. That's what Rabbi Rami Shapiro is joining me here today to talk about. You know, look, I learned something many years ago, and Benny will talk to this, because Benny was my producer then. I have Benny and Micah joining me here today. It was a very interesting journey for me. And gosh, Benny, I don't know how many years back we have to go when the three amigos asked, can we do a show on your network, Pat? You know, can we come on and talk? And I thought, of course you can come on and talk. Why not? And the three amigos, Rabbi Ted, Brother Jamal, they came on the show,
And it was an amazing show. It was just incredible. I mean, this was a representation of how I grew up now and what experience I had in my life. And they went on to write a book. And the book was Interfaith. There was an Interfaith. The show was called Interfaith. It was the Three Amigos. I wrote a book. But what I loved about this was it brought to light the idea of learning lessons, respect, integrity, wisdom. I mean, I could go on. But it left behind some of the things that people like me may have grew up with that just didn't make sense to me. Like I never understood how one day I had to do penance for eating meat on Friday, and then that rule changed. And I asked my priest, can I have the penance back? Can you give me all those Hail Marys and Our Fathers that I had to do when I was eating the meat on a Friday? Because I didn't know that my stepmom actually... They were not fried clams. They were chitlins. So I did. I went in as a teenager, and I walked into the confessional, right? And I just said, I have great news. I can get these Hail Marys and Our Fathers back. I can get them back because you changed the rules. Okay, that didn't work out very well. But it really talks to the confusion I had growing up. But here's what I love about this, and here's what Rabbi Shapiro does in his book so well. You know, what does it mean to have a guide to being a blessing to all the peoples of the earth? What does that mean? See, that's what he's talking about here. What does that mean? And what does it take for us to be able to do that? What kind of wisdom? Me growing up in the Bronx, walking into a priest and like saying, I want you to put them back in my bank account. Is that what it takes? Or does it take something else? Does it take us to learn more? Today, joining me is somebody that brings a powerful, powerful message. But this is a message that probably for him, he probably bumped up against some of the same walls I grew up with. Unorthodox, yeah. Maybe moms and dads that probably looked at them and said, wow, you can't kick her out of Catholic boarding school. She really did have that conversation with Jesus. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was something else. But here's where we are today. He is the author of many, many books, award-winning, best-selling books, biblical translations. Okay, I wish I could talk to him about those. But there's so much more. And today, this is the message for today. This is, by the way, I'm going to hold it up there, Micah. Can you all see that? And I think, Micah, you're going to be putting this up on our social media. But this is the message. What does it mean to have this in my hand, a guide to being a blessing to all the peoples of the earth? Rabbi Shapiro, thank you so much for joining me here today. It's great to have you.
Well, Pat, it's a delight to be here.
Many things I learned as a child that I don't think I was according to the plan of the religion that I was born into. The word you use, rebellious, is probably fits me a little bit better because I just didn't behave very well about these things. But here's the question. How can we, right? And this is going to be my question really from the book. How can we bring this message forward and be less divided?
Yeah, that is the question. And I think the answer is to grow beyond your religion.
Yes.
That, you know, I make a distinction between tribe and tribalism, and I make a distinction between spirituality and religion, and they're basically the same distinction. I'm a Jew. I belong to a Jewish tribe.
Yeah.
If you identify as Catholic, you belong to the Catholic tribe. And the tribe has its own customs and its own, I mean, in Judaism, it's a multilingual, multi-ethnic, multi-racial gathering of people who are tied together by a common story, which is a story and not history. And you could find something similar in every religion, most likely. Tribalism is when you imagine that your tribe is the best tribe, the superior tribe. You know, when the Hebrew Bible says that God chose the Jews from among all the peoples of the earth, that's tribalism, especially if you take it literally.
Mm-hmm.
When certain kinds of Christians say that only there, you can only get to, you know, like Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one gets to the Father except through me.
Yep.
And then they say there's no salvation outside the church. Or the Southern Baptist Convention used to say only Southern Baptists get to go to heaven. That's tribalism. It's silly. And most people, when they think about it, know it's silly. But they're afraid to say the emperor has no clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than do that, they just put their heads down and follow whatever rules they're told. What you're talking about requires a transformation of consciousness. And, you know, the book is called Judaism Without Tribalism.
Yeah.
And then the subtitle is Being a Blessing to All the with peoples of the Earth. The
yeah.
actual, that's not my subtitle.
I know. Believe me, I know what the publishers do.
Yeah. In the Bible itself, it's a quote from Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, where Abraham and Sarah, though they're not called that then, but Abraham and Sarah are called to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. And it doesn't say human families. Peoples implies humans.
Yeah.
It says all the families of the earth. We need a new consciousness that recognizes we're all part of one, I don't know what you want to call it, biofamily, environmental family, you know, whatever the language might be. But the universe is one immense, vibrant family of beings, all of whom are a part of a greater reality that, you know, you can call it God, you can call it whatever you want to call it, and different religions have different names for it, but it's a non-dual reality. It's not a God outside of nature. It's a God who embraces and transcends nature. It's a God who manifests as you and me and the plants behind you and the, you know, the antelope and the deer and the worms, and everything is a manifesting of the divine. And to realize that requires a shift in consciousness. And it's something that, I don't know if it's hard to do, but it's something that most people aren't eager to do necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I have to talk about a couple of things in the book as I was reading through it. I love that you have in here a chapter, and it's right at the beginning, religion at its best. I think that's what you call it, religion at its best. And the reason that I love that you did this, because it reflected, it had me reflect on being a six-year-old in Catholic boarding school. It's unheard of to put a six-year-old in Catholic. I think my dad paid them off. Right? Because my mom was not well. And I had an experience in that school. I mean, I really did. I was sitting there over a weekend, and I looked up at the ninth station of the cross with all the nuns, just me, this little kid, and I heard a voice say something like, "Don't worry, your mom is with me." And I pull on Sister Michael Anthony, and I say, "Hey," that's what I heard him say that. Okay. So she grabs me by the ear and the hair, and we just run, and she's looking for Mother Superior. And you walk into Mother Superior, and her head is down. You can imagine what this looks like, right? Old school, the old school habits, right? Her head is down, and she lifts her eyes up, and she's got tears coming, and she has a note. My mom had passed away. Now, you would think that an experience like that would have been great. I mean, it wasn't. I had violated a rule. My dad and my soon-to-be stepmom had to come immediately. I had to take back that I actually heard that. Why am I sharing this? Because on the one hand, we hear that God, Jesus, Baha'u'llah, Allah, whatever that is, we hear it's available and accessible. But then on the other hand, we have these rules. How do the rules get in the way of religion being at its best?
Yeah, so your story is amazing, and it illustrates one of
I got kicked out of school. I'm just saying. I got kicked out of Catholic boarding school because my soon-to-be stepmom was like a independent Baptist, and she was like, no, she's not taking it back, so they kicked me out. Thank goodness.
Well, here's the thing. Religions are afraid of mystics. A mystic is someone who has or desires to have a direct encounter with the divine, however you define it. And religions are not made for that. Now, there are mystics within every religious tradition, but they're usually on the fringes and oftentimes at odds with the authorities, the religious authorities. And the reason that's the case is because the mystic knows through her experience that the patriarchy and the hierarchy of the various religions and the rules that they turn into idols, really, are just the creation of men. I don't mean mankind. I mean men, actual men, who are looking to control and to maximize their control and their power over other human beings. That's why little kids and mystics are so dangerous to religion, because they don't play that game and they're not intimidated. Now, little kids can be intimidated, but a true mystic, someone who has a direct experience of divine reality, isn't going to be shaken when the Pope or the chief rabbis in Israel or the Ayatollah or anyone else, regardless of how high their status is, says, no, you're wrong. That's not how it works. Because you had an experience. You're not doubting your experience. I mean, you should always be somewhat skeptical about your own experience. You can be tricked. You can be fooled. You can be misled. But when you have the experience you described, and someone says, no, you can't have that experience, well, it's too late. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and you can't go backwards. And so what religions try to do, and they're not going to do it overtly like they have a big sign saying no mystics allowed, but what they try to do is to minimize the mystic tendency that is natural to people, but you can educate people out of it. You can scare them out of it. And that's religion at its worst. Religion at its best, you know, the word religion comes from religare, and it means to unite.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't just mean to unite within a specific religious tradition. It means to unite to me, it's the realization that the entire universe is one being. It's always united, but it's to erase the delusion of separateness that dominates the egoic mind. And so it unites you with the whole, even though when you get united, you realize you were never disunited. But in any case, that's what religion at its best is. And because people are different, we have different languages, different cultures, you can find different ways to experience the union of everything. And some will work for you better than others. So, you know, if you're raised in a Hindu tradition, you know, jumping on the Southern Baptist Convention bandwagon may not do it for you. But there are Hindu mystics who have methodologies to help you realize the truth of your own being. And that's true in every religious tradition. But mystics, as opposed to clerics, you know, the priest, the rabbi, the rest of it, mystics always get along with one another. In 1984, I was lucky enough to be tapped by Father Thomas Keating, who was a phenomenal Catholic priest, who, along with Father Basil Pennington, created the centering prayer movement in Catholicism, but now it's in Christianity in general. And Father Thomas started this 35-year experiment, bringing 12 mystics together from 12 different traditions to live in his monastery for a week at a time and just experience one another's presence and to have conversations about spirituality, I guess. And I didn't go all 35 years. I went for the first few and then checked in periodically. But what I discovered in the very first one in 1984 was that regardless of the label you wore or the clothes that defined you, whether you were a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Quaker, a Native American, Jewish, Orthodox Christian, it didn't make a difference. while the methodologies each of us employed to experience the truth of non-duality, or what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing, regardless of the methodologies we use, the experience was the same, a melting of the isolated ego into the oceanic one out of which all things arise and return. And once we got that realization from one another, I mean, there was nothing to argue about. You were now curious. Okay, how did you do that? And what? How is your text different from my text in a way that I can learn from your, you know? But it wasn't like, oh, you're different, you're bad. And but you're talking about mystics, and so you're talking about people with an altered state of consciousness. That is not the norm. Religion at its best tries to bring you to that mystic consciousness, that mystic awareness. Religion, as most of us experience it, is all about putting you in separate silos and keeping you there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, because, you know, out of the gate in your book, I so loved, went back and read it again. Of course, it's on my favorite numerology, page 11, in the area where you talk about God and gods, because that experience as a young child and having a mom, a stepmom, I didn't know she was going to become my stepmom, because my mom actually did commit suicide. That was a real thing that happened. And of course, you know, I mean, A, B, C, D, right? We now know, like, okay, how could she be with Jesus if she committed suicide? That's like not a thing. But what I love about this, and I was so excited to talk with you, because it changed the trajectory of my life. And so did my stepmom. Now, coming from a Southern Baptist environment, she had her own version of things. And her own version of things was the way you describe it in the book. And I want to read this to everybody. So you say, God, as I use the word, refers not to any tribal deity or to any named God, but to the greater reality manifesting in, with, and as all being. God is not a noun, but a verb. As a verb, God cannot be owned by any tribe or authority, but as a noun, God is always owned. I mean, I had to read that because you set the stage right out of the gate for the rest of the book. I had to read it because I grew up with this mom, this woman, that literally believed what you wrote, but I didn't have the words that you put in here. And what a sense of freedom. Now, I have to tell you, I have been called by multiple past religions that I've been affiliated with a spiritual hitchhiker. I now know that's a compliment. Okay, right? But there are so many people that struggle with these labels. And I think what you're saying in your book, really, at least my interpretation is, the labels truly hold us back from connecting with the divine.
Yeah.
Is that true? Did I make that up, or how close am I?
I think that's 100% true. I don't think, I mean, this sounds a little harsh, but I'll unpack it.
Yeah.
I don't think a Jew, a Christian, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Hindu, an atheist, you know, whatever the label Christian is, the label you want to use, none of those labeled individuals experiences the divine reality that I've experienced. And the reason for that is that as you awaken to that reality, all of your adjectives fall away. You know, you're no longer Jew, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, etc. You're no longer male or female. You're no longer cis or trans. You're nothing but an expression of the divine. You see, so we need a metaphor for this, and I love the Hindu metaphor of the ocean and the wave.
Yeah.
So think of the divine as an infinite ocean. And it just of its own nature, it waves. And its waves are everything that you and I can see in existence. And now that we've got the Webb telescope, we can look back, you know, billions and billions and billions of years and see all these manifestings of the divine. It's all God, whether it's good, whether you like it or you don't like it. You'd say it's good or it's bad or, you know, all those things. It's all God because, as the Hebrew Bible says, Ein od milvado, there is nothing else. There's only God. But what we do, and you mentioned it, but let me, if you don't mind, let me just unpack it. When I say God is a verb, I mean God is a verb because God is dynamic. But in the Hebrew Bible, which is, you know, the first, the Old Testament in
right.
the Christian tradition, the name of God that is used is the unpronounceable, you know, YHVH in some Bibles, YHWH in Hebrew. But the name of God is a verb. And because it's literally untranslatable, unpronounceable, the rabbis thousands of years ago came up with a euphemism. They came up with multiple euphemisms, but one was Adonai, which means Lord.
Adonai,
and
yeah.
that's the one that stuck. Not surprisingly, because Lord is masculine, Lord is hierarchical. The people who came up with it were men in a hierarchy, patriarchy. So that's the one that stuck, though not necessarily among the mystics. But when you pick up an English Bible and you see the word Lord, you know, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital B, you're not getting the real sense of the text. The text gives you, in the original Hebrew, these four letters. They come from the Hebrew verb to be. It's a verb. It's it's the verb to be in the third person future imperfect. Means it's just an ongoing happening of all reality. And you can't own it. You can't name it. That's why it's ineffable. But once you put a tag on it and you say it's Lord, or you say it's Krishna, or you say it's Jesus, or you say it's, you know, Allah, once you put a label on it, then you can own it. Then it becomes an object for veneration, but also for manipulation. And ultimately, if you read the text in Exodus where God is said to reveal the nature of the divine, the first thing that God says is Ehyeh, which usually we translate as I am what I am, or I'm becoming.
Exactly, I was just going to say.
But it's, again, a verb, and it's, there's no am, there's no first person present in Hebrew, so it's like eyeing, forever eyeing. It's what in the Hindu tradition you'd call the eternal subject that is everything, that can see everything, but it can't see itself because it is itself. So it's the I am of Ramana Maharshi or Nisargadatta Maharaj or the other Advaita non-dual Vedanta Hindu teachers. I mean, it's this powerful, powerful statement that is absolutely ruined when we turn God into an object of worship. God is the subject. You know, Meister Eckhart says, the eye with which I see God is the eye with which God sees me. There's only one eye, and that's true if we're talking about the capital letter I. But in a sense, it's also true of the eye I'm looking out of now.
Right.
There's only one, because there's just this unbelievably, I mean, it's infinite and non-dual and dynamic subject happening as everything else. So God knows you and I the way I know my fingers. It's just an extension of who I am. And again, you can't build a religion around that.
No. And, you know, we're going to talk about this when we come back from break because, you know, we are now seeing language. And I'm just going to make this statement. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the many, many other things in here in the book. I'm a kid from the Bronx. I grew up in New York City. We are multicultural, a spiritual environment, even in small places, you know, even in places that you go as this kid growing up in an environment where you don't really have those prejudices. That comes later, but you know, like, where to go to get what. And there's this level that you have, I think, as kids, where you see all these different things prior to the restraint of judgment, and you see them, and your friends are these, right? I mean, even in my own personal journey, you know, being in a relationship with somebody that was Jewish and not understanding certain things, you go to some of the spiritual happenings, and you're drinking too much wine because nobody tells you you're going to drink that wine like 10 times. At the dinner table, right? You drink it like you're an Italian. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about language. We're going to talk about how the words get on paper And we're going to talk about why is it you hear Sarah Maine do her show on ancient Sanskrit, the real ancient Sanskrit, the real translations. She is an expert in it. And why is it that people like me can wear a bracelet that has Sanskrit on it, and people, or a necklace that I wear all the time, and people will make a judgment about that? They will look at it, they will frown upon it, they will decide who I am, they will decide what I believe in by a bracelet that has two words in Sanskrit on it. These are the things that divide us. When we come back, Rabbi Shapiro is going to walk us through. It's an incredible book. Everything is in here. Everything about Judaism, tribalism, joy, grief, death. But we're going to talk about the way we walk when we come back and what the opening and invitation is for all of you. What is the best way for people to find out about you, Rabbi Shapiro, and what is the best way for them to get a copy of the book?
Well, the best way to get a copy of the book is to go to your local independent bookstore. And if they don't have it, they can order it. If that doesn't work for you, then you can go on Amazon and get it that way. So it's readily available. You can reach me or, you know, I'm not, I have two websites. One is www.rabbirami.com. And then my business website is www.oneriverfoundation.org. So either website will work, and certainly you can get the book locally.
Lots really of great, great messaging and information, everybody. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the way we walk. What does that mean? Do we actually have a choice? Do you feel like you have a choice? Do you feel like you can do that? And what happens if you're somebody like me that gets into a 12-step program, a recovery program, and has a sponsor that works with three people at one time, a Christian, a Muslim, and me? What does that look like, and what do you learn from that experience? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
About impacting social change or working towards anti-racism as a society? Are you willing to deconstruct your innermost thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about racism? Then Inflection Point Podcast, Cultivating Change from the Inside Out, is the show for you. Join Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter in open, honest, and deliberate conversations every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
To Maximum Resilience with me, Kelly Bazzani, your ally for addiction, the first Monday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join us and engage in this epic journey of how to own your power and change your perception of addiction while we revolutionize the approach that ensures mental health as we address a worldwide epidemic. Take the steps that lead you towards an incredible life of maximum resilience. We do recover. Visit MyResilienceCoach.com.
Do you question what an authentic life really looks like? Tune in to The Alley Effect with Allison's Life, authentically living life your way. Every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where Allison Blythe brings you tools, resources, and actionable steps toward your very best life. Take responsibility for your own happiness. For more about Allison, visit Allison, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N, Blythe, B-L-Y-T-H-E.com.
Are you struggling with truly being happy in life? Do you often question who you really are? I'm Tracy Lynn Wallace, a self-love mentor and life coach who can help you identify and access subconscious blocks to move you into a place of freedom, success, and happiness. Visit inspiredwisdomcoaching.com to sign up for my VIP list and get updates on my exclusive workshops so you can awaken your magic within. That's inspiredwisdomcoaching.com.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dreams that sets your soul on fire. So, get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek. Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the golden age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net. Everybody, welcome back. It's so great. What we're talking about, Judaism Without Tribalism, A Guide to Being Blessing to All the Peoples of the Earth with Rabbi Rami Shapiro. And by the way, fabulous book. Everything is covered in here, and there's so much in here that, I just want to say to everybody that we're going to get to some of it, but get your own copy of the book. And Benny, by the way, I'd like to give away two copies of the book if we could right now. 1-800-930-2819. Benny, say hi to Benny. Lots in the book. Everything from talking about world healers. See, that's like world healers. That's not like world healer in a tribe. It's like about healers. Everything is in here. And as you go through it, you also start to appreciate the days of reflection. We start to look at these days. You know, what is Rosh Hashanah? What does that mean? What does that days of reflection mean? And how do these days show up across the board? Are there similarities? Are there differences? And, you know, when we look at this, one of the things that I love about this is we're not leaving out the part of the journey, right? Rabbi Shapiro puts in here, part of the journey about joy and grief. I love that. He puts them in both in the same chapter, joy and grief, because all of this contributes to what we're going to talk about now. Given reminders, given joy and grief, I want to ask you this, Rabbi Shapiro. Does it all point to and boil down to the way we choose to walk?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, joy and grief are sort of built into the system. But you can't really, you can't live regardless of how you walk. You're going to walk in a world of joy and grief. Because those are two responses to whatever is happening to you.
Oh, boy, something, are they.
You know, someone may experience X and find it incredibly joyful, and someone else coming from some other, you know, psychological space can have the same experience and find it very, you know, a grieving experience. So I think we have to just realize that life isn't one thing or the other. It's just everything. There's a wonderful in Qigong, which is a Chinese, you know, healing movement practice.
Yeah.
There's a stance that comes from Taoism. You're standing with your erect, your feet are slightly, you know, hips width apart, whatever, and your hands are held like this. I mean, I'm sitting in a chair. This is not the way to do it. But your hands are held out, palms up, and the stance is called monk begging for rice. And the idea is the monk just can't sustain themselves, so they have to beg for rice. And what you get in the Taoist phrasing, you get the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows of everyday living. And you're going to have to sustain yourself with that. And you can't avoid one or the other. You can deny them. You can reject joy, and you can flee from sorrow, but you're going to get them anyway. So it's a question of more our understanding of what reality is than choosing one posture over another. I mean, it's a little confusing. I have a problem with free will. I'm not sure that we have absolute free will. I think that we are the product of, you know, billions upon billions of prior events that create the situation in which we find ourselves. And I don't know if I'm really free to choose one way or the other, because there's just so many dimensions to me that I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you 100 million percent on that one. Thank you. Thank you for giving me permission to feel like a pariah in that conversation.
There you go.
Right? Because confusing is a cop-out. So let me just say that. I don't think I'm confused. I think I'm kind of landing where you are.
Yeah, it's just a matter of not knowing. I think there's got to be a fundamental humility about your experience in life. You just don't know. But you can stay open to whatever it is, and you can, and this maybe you could say is choice. I'm not going to argue one way or the other, but the language implies what it implies. So, you know, so you get the sorrows, you get the joys. If you realize that it's all from the same divine source, and of which you yourself are a part, then the resistance to whatever it is dissipates. And you're simply present to it. And, you know, in the book of Ecclesiastes, in the third chapter of Ecclesiastes, he says to everything there is a time, a purpose, to everything under heaven. And, you know, then he goes through a whole list of things, a time for birth, a time for death, a time for building, a time for tearing down, a time for joy, a time for crying, you know, all these things. And the idea is you have to know what time it is in your life. And if it's crying time, and your friends or family say, stop crying already, get over your grief, go out, be happy, whatever, you know, and it's still crying time for you, then you should cry. You have to be true to your own moment. And if that's the way you walk through the world, being true to your own moment, then I think you make room for everyone else to be true to their own moments. And there's a sense of shared reality, because we both know joy and sorrow. And so, okay, I get where you're at. And if I can alleviate some of the sorrow, that'd be wonderful. If I can just be present with you, if that helps, that's what I can do. But it's not about I'm in control. You know, there are some religions, some spirituality teachers, New Age teachers, who say it's your mind creates your own reality. And if you're sad, it's because you're creating sadness. And if you're depressed, it's your fault. And if you get cancer, it's your fault. And, you know, all of this. I don't think that's true. Mm. I don't think that's true, because I don't think there's a you. I think it's all God happening. Mm. And, you know, you can just glom onto some piece and say, oh, that's me. But in fact, it's all God in the cosmic, you know, in that larger absolute dimension. So, the idea is just to be present to whatever the reality is at the moment, knowing it's going to shift eventually.
You know, I'm fascinated.
State of flux.
I'm fascinated by this. And just that question just hit me, you know, because, I mean, what is it like to be you, Rabbi Shapiro, right, knowing the traditions and perhaps tribalism of the Jewish traditions? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I know what it's like to be me and growing up like with Catholic and like a couple of different Baptist things going on there, and then deciding that I'm not going to be part of that tribe and not going to be part of that tribe. I know what I went through with that. And I made some decisions. Okay, so like about 30 years ago, I made some decisions that I just needed to try a whole bunch of things out. And it was being in a relationship with someone that was Jewish that helped me understand, oh, wait a minute, I'm learning some things I'd never learned before. But this is your path. This is your journey.
Yeah. I mean, I would say a couple of things.
Sure.
I mean, first, I have no idea what it's like to be me. Because I don't even know who me is, right? I mean, if I say, what's it like to be a Jewish guy who discovered you know, who was introduced to Buddhism and Hinduism in 11th grade high school.
There you go.
I know what that guy went through.
Yeah.
But the observer me, the me that just looks out, I can't make an object out of that, so I don't know what it's like. It's just there. But my you know, Rami's experience, I grew up in an Orthodox home. When I was 16, I was introduced by two high school teachers who had spent a summer in India. They came back and they started teaching Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism and Confucianism. And I fell in love with Zen at the time. And I went, got a Zen teacher. You know, I went through this whole thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm 71. And this was a long time ago. And in the intervening time, I had Hindu teachers and Sufi teachers. And I love religion. I mean, you can see my background if you have Zoom. I have stuff from every religion. I have the sacred texts of every religion on my shelves. I find them all incredibly valuable.
Mm.
Now, that makes you, made me a heretic, you know, not just when I was younger, but, you know, just in the last couple of days, right? So, I mean, I was doing some Zoom thing at a synagogue, and people left because I have the crucifix over my, you know, my left shoulder, right? And they were offended. The Om didn't bother them. The Japanese Zen stuff
right.
didn't bother them. If I leaned over, the Bismillah from Islam didn't bother them. But the crucifix triggered them in such a way that they had to get away, that somehow I was tainted because I was honoring that tradition. Now, I don't know if you can see the crucifix carefully.
Yes, I could see it.
It's not a standard crucifix. Actually, it's Mary on the cross holding Jesus, sort of a paeta kind of thing on the cross. And it was a gift from on an interfaith trip that I took to Israel
mm-hmm.
in Palestine. And the idea is it's the Divine Mother's being crucified. Because I think that's changing now, but I think that's been the history of the last couple mm-hmm. thousand years in the Western traditions, that the divine feminine is lost to us. And though I think she's making a comeback.
Yeah, I'm hoping that. I'm really sitting there with you.
Yeah, I think you can see that in
mm-hmm.
in the return of the divine feminine in lots of different traditions, and in people's independent experience of the Divine Mother. I mean, I've experienced her multiple times. So anyway, I think I'm way off track.
No, you're not. You're right there, because that is really the conversation that we're having today, because I think this is the more we can talk about this is the more we can show people that there are ways. Now, I just got a text message question that came in from one of our listeners, and I'll answer it. But I think you answered it for me, and it's a question because I made reference to a Sanskrit bracelet I have.
That's right.
And that I wear. And so the question that came in, and for those of you there, I'm going to try to hold this up. I don't know if we can get it in the camera. I don't know if you can see it. But this is Sanskrit, and it is pure love. And it's beaten up pretty bad because I don't take it off. I play my sport with it, so it gets beat up. So the question is, what was your first involvement? I had to think about this, but here it is. When I was homeless on the streets of New York City, and I'm 17, and I got booted out because of who I was, and I'm homeless on the streets. I had so many different, let's call them angels for lack of a better word. I had a lot of I am energy that helped me. But the one group that saw me dirty and, I mean, come on, right? You know what I'm talking about. We knew them back then. They were on the corners in white, and they had the tambourines, right? And they had beautiful mantras. And all day long, day and night, that's what they would do. And I took one look at them, and I saw clean clothes. If I joined them, this is me. Right? Because you're homeless. You're not, no food, no water. You know where you are. And I looked at them and I was drawn to them. It was my first experience. We knew them, and the people joke about the Krishna consciousness, the Hare Krishna. They joke about it. But I'm 17. I didn't know anything like that. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to reach out to them. See, at moments of desperation, what I call godding is when godding is like the not the noun of God, but when godding happens, things like that show up. And that was my first interaction to answer, Mary, thank you for your question on my phone. That was my first engagement in an experience of learning about something with language I couldn't even pronounce, but I felt so cared for. And I think at 17, you don't lose that. See, isn't that what you're talking about here? Isn't that when you take the tribe out of the picture?
It's when you take the tribalism out of the picture.
Tribalism out of the picture.
I mean, Krishna followers are a tribe, you could say. But
they totally are.
But they don't have to be tribalistic.
Exactly.
Although some probably are. Yeah, I think this is not exactly to your situation, but just to talk about the power of what you, I'm reading into it, what you may have experienced.
No, it's powerful.
So the clean clothes is one thing, but I mean, I've spent a lot of time with Krishna people. The mantra is so powerful. There are a lot of mystics at the moment who say that the work of this time, the spiritual work of this time, is mantra chanting. Not exclusively necessarily to the Divine Mother. Hare Krishna is not to the Divine Mother, it's to Krishna. But the chanting itself is, I mean, you can't chant wrong.
Right.
You know, you could be off key. You might mispronounce the words, but you really can't make a mistake. Whereas so many other rituals, you can get them wrong. There's so many details. Chanting is just something that happens that I think most people naturally fall into. And you start out as a chanter, as a baby. It's baby babbling. You know, and then we put words to it, and then we add meaning to it. But there's something intrinsic when you were, you know, before you had language, you still spoke in a sense. You made sound. You made what the Bible calls a joyful noise, right? And it was spontaneous. And what mantra does, and I'm talking about out loud mantra, though you can do silently too. But what mantra does is it invites you, like Jesus says, to be like a little child. And to just sing these phrases
in
community, and the power of that is
incredible.
Is amazing. Whether you're talking about Hare Krishna or Teze in Christianity, or you know, chanting in other traditions, every tradition has its version of chanting. And I want to make it clear, I'm talking about chanting, not camp songs.
No, chanting.
Right, there's a chanting thing that every tradition has. And that's very, very compelling to lots of us and very, very liberating.
Yeah.
Because when you're engaged in that chant, the other chant that the ego always deals with, I, me, mine, all the judgmental stuff, you can't chant two chants at once. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, then that I, me, mine chant disappears. Mm-hmm. For at least a bit, and you experience this other level of expanded consciousness.
I totally agree. I actually think that my experience, and first of all, being on the corner they were on, I don't even recollect how that happened, but being able to reach out and ask them for help, because I had asked others for help, and I didn't get it. I couldn't get in the why. But there was something about that moment that day where I was so drawn to it, and I remember this like it was yesterday. And I remember trying to be there with them chanting the mantra. I think that my experience, albeit it was brief, and I think my experience being homeless was brief because of my experience with them, because something changed in me. I can't even explain it to you. But understanding and have them take me in, so to speak, and have me willingly be part of this energy and this life force, my next choices that I made, I believe, move me out of that homeless state quicker than I would have been able to do otherwise. I really believe that. And I didn't understand it. But I knew I felt better.
Yeah.
I knew I felt better.
How do I know my spiritual practice is working? Well, one way is it makes you feel better.
No kidding, right?
Another way is it makes you act more kind and compassionate toward other beings. It's not rocket science. You can actually measure, am I more generous, more compassionate, more filled with gratitude than I was before I started this practice? If the answer is no, if the practice is making me stingy and snarly and xenophobic, that's a bad practice.
Yeah.
If you go to church, synagogue, or anywhere else, and you're told that there's the enemy out there, get the hell out of that building.
Right.
But if you're told, you know, like the Bible says a million times, you know, love your neighbor and then love the stranger, and Jesus says love your enemy, if that's what you're being taught and you're taught how to do it, so it's not just a platitude, you know, then maybe there's something you have to learn, you can learn there. But so much of religion is about identifying an enemy and then getting rid of the enemy. And I think that's just getting worse lately.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it is getting worse, and we see it now playing in just not just in our everyday life, but we're seeing it play out in governments, and we're seeing it play out where, you know, there is a dominant tribe, and that dominant tribe is like, we are the one, and honestly, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that there are more than just that one. Unless you are living under a rock. But, you know, what you're talking about in this book is allowing us to open our hearts and open our minds and to really gather the power and the experience of so much of the teachings. I mean, teachings without tribalism. I mean, imagine that. So I wanted to thank you for that today. Thank you for joining us here today. Again, please tell people how they can find out about you and how they can buy a copy of your book. And by the way, we've given away the two copies. They went quick. How do we find out more about you? And thank you so much for today.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Pat. My website's rabbirami.com and oneriverfoundation.org. And you can find the book through an independent bookstore. Or if, chain store works, probably. Mm-hmm. They're probably independently, they employ local people. and then Amazon. There's always Amazon. This has been a real pleasure, Pat. Thank you.
Yes, and there's so much more in here in the book. Thank you. One last question. What's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
You know, the only thing I didn't say, just in the last thing we're talking about with religion, you know, it makes you crabby and cranky. If your God needs guns, that's not God.
Yeah.
Let's leave that out there.
Yeah, I don't know why God would need guns.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW.